This is Keith Wood, and you're listening to A Professional Day in the Life. On the show this week, we have Tom Inkrat. He is the head strength and conditioning coach at Minnesota State University and owner of Body Art Protein. We're doing this over the phone today, so it might sound a little bit different. But Tom, can you give us an idea of what a strength coach does at the college level and how you came up with the idea to start the protein company?
Yep. So I guess what a strength coach does, and it's probably going to vary on depending on who you ask, but in the way I always explain what a strength coach is I have someone think of, let's say, a football team or a volleyball team, and there's a person that makes those student athletes stronger and faster, and they do that through conditioning and lifting weights. So my position is basically the person that prescribes them workouts to make them stronger and then conditioning to make them faster and more agile. In the most basic sense, I would say that's what a strength coach does. The difference between a strength coach and a personal trainer, works for one-on-one, whereas a strength coach will work with groups of athletes. So, for example, a football team, a volleyball team, a soccer team, at the collegiate level. Well, collegiate, professional, high school level, etc. Okay. How I got into Body Art Protein, or how I had the idea, as a strength coach, I'm approached quite a bit from, let's say, like Advocare, Isagenics, supplement companies that want me to push their products to my athletes. That combined with my athletes asking a lot, what kind of protein should I take or what supplements should I take? Answering the question, I would spend anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes telling them to look for, what to be cautious of, and explaining that it's not really the name brand as much as it is what's in the product itself, the quality of the protein, the type of protein, or the type of the supplement, and not the name brand of the supplement. And after our conversation, they would always say, well, just tell me what to buy. But it's not about the name brand. So I got to thinking, I'm like, what would it take to start my own company? Started looking into it. One of my former athletes did an internship with a company, I think it was Hormel Foods, maybe. Anyway, a pilot study for that company in developing a protein. So I called him, asked him some questions about what he did to develop it for that company, or like that pilot study. And he said, there'd be some startup costs, but overall, it's very feasible to do. So from there, I just started making phone calls to like different companies in terms of like canisters and lids. Started looking for someone to manufacture, to actually blend the protein for me, and just kept moving forward and got in touch with All American Foods, which is a food manufacturing company here in Mankato, and they agreed to worked with them and just kept moving forward.
Tom, you're breaking up a little bit. I don't know if maybe you moved your placement. Not really?
Nope, I didn't move.
Okay, all right.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, yep.
Okay, perfect. I guess that was basically it, though. I just started asking questions, and that's pretty much how I came up with it.
Okay.
How it got started.
No, it's a cool idea. It definitely makes a lot of sense. If you're going to push somebody else's product, why not just make your product and make the best product so that people are getting what they need. But tell us how you're a strength coach, right? And every sport has a sport coach. So I think that's kind of a unique position where you're the coach for most sports, if not all the sports. So how do you think that's different from a sport coach to a strength coach? How are your roles different? How do you play a different, I guess, role in that athlete's life?
You know, that's a great question. I guess I never really thought of it like that before in terms of how our roles are different. I have to believe they're pretty similar. It's pretty similar, really. Different personalities, I guess. To explain what I mean by different personalities, our soccer coach isn't really. I guess I should be careful because you might listen to this, but I would say he's not real authoritative. He's not, from my understanding, going to raise his voice much. He's not going to be the real disciplinary. Whereas in the weight room, I have a high expectation, and not that I yell at the athletes, but if the group isn't doing what I'm asking, and if they're not giving me 110%, I will raise my voice to get their attention, to push them, to get them to work harder, more or less. And I think that's something that he wouldn't do. So my role on that team, I feel like, is more of the authoritative role. Again, I almost hate to say a sport, but there's another sport where the coach is definitely the authoritative. He will definitely raise his voice. He'll definitely be, I'll be honest, he's kind of scary. And I'm not, you know, I'm not the alpha authoritative, you know, on that team. So my role, I guess, would be still a leader, but not the authoritative leader. So I guess it's a leadership role for all the teams, but at different levels is what I would say.
I mean, that's kind of interesting because, you know, you have to be the one that reads the team and how they are, because, you know, I think the old adage, attitude reflects leadership, is very, very true. So they have their head coach for their sport, and they're kind of going to represent how that person interacts with them. So your job is to read that situation and then be the, in a way, the supplemental coach to make sure that they're getting what they need to get what they need out of your program.
So yeah, I would say that's a great way of putting it. I think the term for that, I could be wrong, but I think for the term for, like, reading people, reading groups, is emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my emotional intelligence has definitely improved throughout the years, because I do get asked by almost all of the coaches, how were they today? And I need to translate that information. You know, was the energy good? Did they work hard? Were they quiet today? Were they quiet but still worked hard? So yeah, I guess I would definitely have differing roles for each group.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think about it, that's a tough thing to do. Whereas, you know, you're just one sport and you are who you are, and that's how it is. Versus you got to have that level of adaptability to be, you know, that right person for every sport. So it's kind of cool. But also, with that said, you know, you have your role as the head strength coach at the university. And, you know, do you do any teaching also for the university? Or are you just predominantly working in the weight room?
Just working in the weight room. I was looking into potentially teaching a class. I think it was about 2 years ago, two or three years ago. I was looking into it, but it came down to, who am I kidding? I do not have enough time for that.
Right. Well, you do have a business, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't teach. I will talk. I will talk to a class usually like once, maybe twice a year. So like once the first semester, once the second semester. One of the teachers likes to bring me in and talk about, I guess, what we're talking about right now. The strength conditioning field, what I do, internship opportunities. If someone was interested in getting into strength conditioning, what would they do? So other than that, I don't teach at all.
Okay. Now let's talk about everybody wants to know what the magic the silver bullet or whatever you call it, the magic potion, the magic trick to working out is. I mean, I have a background in strength and conditioning, of course, as well, and all that stuff. So you come across people, and it seems like to me they're always trying different stuff. They're always trying different stuff, and it's almost like they're creating new things to avoid, in my opinion, what is better termed as hard work. It seems like nobody really wants to work that hard, but they want all the effects of it. So, not to answer my question, but I'd like to hear your answer to it. What do you think? One, and we'll talk from a hierarchy perspective. What's the one thing that you need to make a change physically? Whether you want to be a bodybuilder, whether you want to get in better shape, whether you want to be an elite athlete at an elite level, or whatever it is. But what's the one thing that you need? And then to branch off of that, what are some sub factors that are going to improve your likelihood that you'll succeed with your exercise and strength program?
I would say, if it has to be one thing, I would say, it is hard work, but it's lifting heavy weights and keeping track of how much weight that you're doing. With that said, we don't always train strength. We don't always train heavy. So to train strength, you have to be at 80% of your max or higher. In my opinion, making a program sport specific, the basic principles of improving strength, power, and speed are essentially the same. To make a program sport specific, you mimic the motor patterns and the speed at which those motor patterns occur for each sport. With that, in terms of the basic principles of improving strength, power, and speed, I kind of use a block periodization. So we'll train strength and then power and then speed, and each phase kind of builds upon the previous. If all you ever do is train strength, you're going to plateau and eventually get hurt. If all you ever do is train power, you're not going to achieve the highest level of performance possible because you're missing out on some of the benefits that you get from training strength. And if all you ever do is train speed, then you're definitely not going to achieve your highest level of performance because you're not doing power and you're not doing speed. So to answer the question simply, I would say train strength and keep track of how much weight that you're lifting. But don't always train strength.
I got you. So it's kind of varied to some level. Would you say that's true for, let's say, and I'll get you out of the box on this, out of your, collegiate strength coach box. Let's say you're a 40-year-old, middle-aged person that wants to just be healthier. That wouldn't you say that makes up majority of the population and their and their want to participate in exercise is basically to look and feel better. What do you tell someone like that?
I would tell them the same thing. With a 40-year-old, if you look at the average 40-year-old that goes to the fitness room, the gym, Anytime Fitness, Planet Fitness, whatever, wherever they're going, they're probably
breaking up real quick.
15. Oh.
So you said Anytime better, Fitness better, was the last one.
Better. Is it better now?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. For the average 40-year-old, I would probably give them the same advice because what they're doing is they're probably going to the gym and doing a lot of sets of 8, 10, and 12, maybe even up to 15. But if they would drop their reps down to, let's say, 6 to 8, maybe even 5, 6, 7, 8, and do heavier weight, they'll put on more strength. As they put on more strength, their metabolism is going to boost. It's going to go up because as you have more muscle, your metabolism is higher, and therefore they're going to burn more calories at rest because they have more overall strength. Being 40 years old, they're going to need a little bit more recovery because they don't recover quite as quick as they did when they were in their 20s or even 30s for that matter. So they're not going to be able to train strength every day. But if they were able to train strength, let's say at least 3 days a week, and then maybe one or two extra days of doing cardio, or if they just train strength 3 days a week and do 30 minutes of cardio with that, I think they will still have a very, very positive adaptation to that strength workout. And if they're 40 years old, training strength, keeping track of their weights, it's probably the strongest they will have ever been, because to my knowledge, a lot of 40-year-olds, it wasn't very popular to train or to even work out until the 21st century, like right now.
Okay. What do you say to, what do you say to somebody that's, they're in the rock climbing, okay? And I'll play this off of stuff that exists, right? There's CrossFit, right?
Yep.
And CrossFit is what CrossFit is. And then there's a guy called, his name's Jim Jones. Have you heard of Jim Jones?
I have, yeah.
So have you looked at any of his stuff? I think it's all pay for now, but maybe 5-6 years ago, everything was free. You could read.
I don't think I've looked at anything recently.
So you'll basically look at a Jim Jones, but you've seen it before, some of his workouts, and is that true?
I've heard of his name, yeah. I'm not real familiar with his workouts or anything. I just know the name.
Okay, so this is a little bit crude description, but you would take a CrossFit workout and then double it or triple it in volume. So you would just make it just completely devastational, right? And what do you say to that? I mean, because this dude's the guy that trained the guys in 300. The movie 300, that we're obviously in pretty good shape. Do you think that you'd have a better adaptation and elicit better success with a program like you were describing? Or do you think you should come in and just balls of the wall, just ridiculously devastational training until you do adapt? Not concerning injuries. Let's not include injuries, because that's...
Yeah. Sorry, someone just walked in my office.
That's all right.
I would say you could... I mean, there's definitely a time and a place for everything. And the workout that you're describing is considered work capacity. And work capacity is excellent to do at the beginning of... let's say a training year at the beginning. But if you do the workout you're describing for too long, injury and overuse injuries are inevitable. It's just physically impossible to go that hard all the time for most people. Some people are able to handle that volume day in and day out. However, most people, they'll get overuse injuries and they'll just get injured.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say there's a time and a place where that will work, but it won't work all the time.
So let's say you're talking about like a more work capacity oriented sport. Do you spend time hitting the work capacity portion of it, or are you just sticking with the strength, maybe combining some strength moves to touch on work capacity? Or yeah, how do you handle that?
I would say if it were me, possibly, or me personally, I would put it into blocks. So I would have a strength block. I'd also have a work capacity block. And there would also be times of the year when I combined them. Being that it is a work capacity sport, we'd probably train work capacity more closer to the competition or like their in season. However, if they never increase their base level of strength, they won't, in my opinion, they won't ever achieve their highest potential. Because as someone has more strength, general exercises and general daily living is just easier for them. So if someone has a high level of strength, a low body fat, doesn't matter what they're doing, it's going to be easier for them.
So let's say, got a lot of let's say kind of questions. You're in this situation, you're not a strength coach training a team. You're more of a personal trainer or a strength coach with an individual. And the individual maybe is somebody, maybe they're of the performing arts, you know, or maybe they are a rock climber, or maybe they're just somebody that needs mobility. So I guess the first question is, do you think that hypertrophy truly restricts range of motions? I mean, hypertrophy below abnormally odd bodybuilder hypertrophy, normal levels of hypertrophy. Do you think that really truly restricts range of motion, and would that be something that you want to avoid? Can you avoid that while training strength with people that want to avoid it?
I would say, hypertrophy can definitely be a limiting factor in terms of range of motion for someone with a lot of hypertrophy. So I'm thinking of someone who is a bodybuilder and probably on steroids.
Right, usually.
To get that big, because in my 8 years, I have yet to see a natural athlete gain a level of hypertrophy that restricted their range of motion. Now, there are exercises such as the bench press that limits shoulder range of motion if done for too long. I believe, such as, let's say, a baseball player, even a softball player, if all they ever do is bench, that could definitely restrict some of their range of motion, being that the bench press has a limited range of motion movement in the shoulder. So it's definitely important, I would say, for athletes to maintain their flexibility, range of motion, and even achieve that for some people. Their hips and hamstrings, calves, whatever, makes it extremely difficult for them to squat. So everybody's different. Everybody has to, get to a level of range of motion to be able to train correctly and prevent injury in some cases.
Okay. Big point of contention here is with baseball, the overhead athlete. And there's people, there's pros out there that, pro strength trainers, you're professional too, So what's your thought on training the pitcher in specific?
To be honest, our basic principles are like I said, improving strength, power, speed are about the same. What we will do, obviously, a little bit more with the shoulder and the scap to help protect their shoulder. Rotator cuff is the obvious one. A lot of scap work. We won't do a lot of overhead stuff, but we will do some overhead stuff, like a single arm dumbbell shoulder press. I personally won't have them do a military press, which is with the bar. And then we will do different med ball throws, jumps, plyos, that kind of stuff that kind of mimics some of the movements that they go through when they pitch.
You're gonna do overhead stuff with dumbbells or kettlebells or plates or anything like that?
We don't have kettlebells, so we'll do dumbbells. But we will do some overhead stuff. I think it would be a little naive to not do something overhead, being that they are throwing overhead. So again, it's not going to be a lot, but we'll do a little bit. I think a little bit has benefit to completely cut out all overhead. I think might be too much, but I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong, but that's just how I do it here.
Well, so, there's validity in what you're saying, but describe what a little bit is. Does a little bit kind of vary from athlete to athlete? So let's say you have a pitcher that just threw 100 pitches, and you know he pitches every 7 days or however often it is that they pitch. I mean, is that your pitcher that maybe you're gonna do less overhead so that you don't affect their mechanics?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, I mean, and now you're even getting into, the in season, and I guess I was thinking more off season. So,
okay.
You definitely have to be careful in season if they're pitching so much.
So do
or
you?
That much, I should say.
Yeah. So I mean, you got to communicate with the strength coach. You communicate with the sports medicine athletic training staff pretty well, and kind of have to frame workouts around whatever's going on from an injury or overuse standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We do all of that.
Okay. How does that kind of work out? I mean, is it something that you kind of got to find out, or, you know, you're presented with, or, you know?
You know, here it's a lot via email.
Okay.
We keep in touch with the athletic trainers that kind of let us know what's going on with injured athletes. And if an athlete did pitch, we actually get it from the athlete tells us, hey, I pitched, I had this many pitches, this is what I did in the game. And if they have injured anything, the athletic trainer tells us, and then the athlete will tell us again, you know, that they got hurt or whatever happened, this is sore, whatever. And then we just kind of roll with it from there. I think baseball is one of those unique sports that it pretty much requires you to kind of change on the go.
Mm-hmm. Do you do like a pitcher's flush type thing, or what do you think about that whole theory?
Yeah, we do. We do. We have like a little bit more of a circuit type of workout. Like a pitcher's flush, I guess, is the popular term for it after an athlete has pitched.
Okay. So, what do you guys have a dietitian that works with them too for recovery and all that stuff?
We do have a dietitian. She more or less takes care of everybody. I would say where the majority of their athletes get their nutritional information from me. I like to read. I read quite a bit, and nutrition is one of my more favorite topics, I guess you would say. So I have a meal plan that I've set up, going from 1,800 calories all the way up until 6,000 calories. And what I'll do is I'll have an athlete email me their body weight, height, and age, and then based off of those numbers, I can tell them exactly how many calories, protein, carbon, fat that they'll need. I'll send them a meal plan that sets up exactly what to eat, when to eat, breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, snack, and then I have workouts in there in terms of snack ideas, what to eat before and after workout, before and after practice. So,
what about sleep? Like, they're student athletes that. They got finals, they got big tests, they got sports, they got to travel, they got, you know, somewhat of a social life, I'd assume. What do you tell them about sleep?
To get it.
Yeah.
To get sleep.
That's sound advice.
We definitely let them know that the amount of sleep that they get will definitely have an effect on their performance, not only in the weight room but on the field, court, pool, whatever. Sleep plays a large part in their recovery process. So we definitely explain and go over the importance of getting enough sleep.
How many hours of sleep do you think that you need at least a night? Or do you think you can get like 4, 4, 4, 8, 8, 8, and that'd be fine? Or
I wouldn't think. According to the literature, the average person does need eight to nine hours. Everybody is a little bit different, but for the most part, 90% of the population fall within 8 to 9 hours of sleep is what they need for optimal recovery. I think it was that same article quoted, but it said that elite athletes will get 10 hours of sleep. So like our Olympians and whoever else.
Were they taking a nap or something?
10 hours. I don't know how they're getting that. I mean, okay. Their job is basically to
perform,
eat, train, and sleep. Perform. Yeah. So.
Do you think
naps are?
Some people say naps are good. Do you think a nap is a good thing? You know, let's say, all right, let's say, you know, what? Well, all right, let's say it's football, and they got an 8 o'clock game on a Saturday night. Do you say, hey, take a nap at 3 for a half an hour, or just let them do whatever they want, or what do you think?
I would say what's their game routine. Whatever they're used to doing, whatever they normally do is what they should do. If they feel better and they perform better with a 20-30 minute nap, absolutely get that nap. If they don't feel as good with the nap, I would say avoid the nap. I think it's all about how, athletes, I feel, should pay attention to their bodies. When they eat something, if they get this X amount of sleep, whatever it is that they're doing, pay attention to their body. How do they feel? And use that to their advantage to get the most out of themselves for competitions, workouts, practice, whatever. I think it's very important to keep an eye on their body, how they feel.
Okay. You're to an extent probably athletic, right? You still lift yourself.
I would like to think so. Yeah, I love working out.
What do you bench? That's the question.
You know what? I hurt my shoulder a while ago. I just started benching again, but it's back up to, like, I would say it's right around 300. I did 275 for 3. I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago or something. So
okay,
it's got to be close to 300.
You know, I saw a video the other day. You were cleaning. I think it was a power clean from the ground. Well, how much was on there? I couldn't figure it out.
That was only 264.
That's still pretty heavy.
It wasn't bad.
So what's a guy like you got to do to perform well? Because you perform, you know, when your teams come in and you got to train them, you got to perform well. You know, what are you doing to make sure you're on top of your game? Are you getting 8 hours of sleep a night? Do you eat healthy? Do you, you know, what do you do?
I would say I eat very well. I've totally eliminated trans fat from my diet. I have breakfast, snack, lunch, dinner, and I have a protein shake before bed. I work out twice a day. I get up at 4:10 so that I can work out before my first group.
Still working out twice a day, man.
Yeah, I love it. I've been working out for twice a day for, gosh, I bet it's probably been 12.
I remember you were doing that when we went to Bowling Green. You were doing twice a day, and I was like, I've done it before, but that's a full commitment.
Yeah, still doing that 2-day grind.
Man,
I love it.
What do you single arm row?
Single arm row?
Throw you off guard a little bit.
Is that what you're asking? My dumbbell row?
Yeah, your dumbbell row.
My dumbbell row. I was doing
120s
work sets with. No, I'm doing work sets with 130s.
Oh my god!
Last week.
That's quite a bit of weight, man. Even just holding your hand, that's a lot of weight.
Yeah, that's the limiting factor. I refuse to use
grips.
Grips or like straps.
Yeah.
I refuse to use those. So the highest dumbbell we have is 150, and I've done 4 with 150. And again, my grip is the limiting factor.
How many pull-ups? How many pull-ups you do? 20?
The last time I maxed out on pull-ups, it was like 28 or something. Holy. But I like to do weighted pull-ups. I'll put 77 pounds around my waist, and I'll do pull-ups for sets of 6.
That is insane.
Yeah, it's two bumpers. It's a 44 pound and a 33 pound bumper around my waist. Feels awesome.
Got to get you on the farm doing some work.
No shit,
like a machine.
Right?
Anything else? You know, do you keep up on? You were saying earlier that you listen to audiobooks and stuff like that. That help you keep sharp too.
I do. Yeah, my goal is to read. I like to read at least 30. I prefer reading an hour every day / night. Sometimes I don't quite get an hour, but 30 minutes is the minimum amount of time I allow myself to read. So I have to get at least 30 every day. And then I usually listen to at least 30 or 40 minutes of my audiobook every day. And that kind of varies with how much time I spend in my car.
Okay. And what, you know, being a successful person as you are and being a determined person as you are and being able to have the discipline to work out twice a day, get adequate sleep, cut trans fat out of your diet, one arm row 130 pounds for multiple sets, do 28 strict pull-ups, and whatever else. I mean, I'm sure you do some other pretty outstanding feats of physical and mental performance, but I mean, you know, that's more than like three people do in a day. But what kind of advice are you going to give to somebody? What's if you could put into one sentence or maybe one quick blurb, what are you going to say to somebody to any point in their career to give them a piece of advice or just something to look back on or reflect to or reference to keep performing at that peak level of performance?
Okay. I would say self-discipline is a muscle, and that's actually true. Your self-discipline is a muscle. So if there's something that you want to do, if you just start working towards it, every little bit of success you have towards that goal will compound and build, and eventually one day, as long as you keep at it, you'll either achieve your goal or you'll achieve something very similar to your goal. Because, I mean, in any path, in anybody's journey, they have a goal. But if, you know, sometimes you take a detour, you go a different path, a different route. But I would say whatever it is that you want to achieve in life, just keep working at it. Because I've felt it myself, and I know other people that I've worked with and communicated with, self-discipline, it is a muscle that can be trained, so keep working at it.
All right, I got you. One more thing. You know, you get enough sleep, you do all that stuff, I've summarized it already, but do you watch TV, you know, do you?
I do not.
Do you, do you own a TV?
I cut TV out of my I don't know,
diet,
life, I guess, life, I guess you'd say, yeah.
Do you own one?
I cut TV out probably three or four years ago. I stopped watching TV.
Do you live in a house, or do you just, like, live out in the woods?
I do live in a house.
Okay.
I do live in a house. It's a good house, I think. It's a little one. It's a starter house. Actually, I just bought the house last year, so...
Okay.
I always rented up until that point.
Do you own a TV?
I do own a TV. My cousin gave me a TV, and then my fiance moved in and she had a TV. So I actually have two TVs in my house. One of them is in the spare bedroom that literally never gets turned on, and the other one in our living room is only turned on when I'm not home because she's bored and wants to watch Netflix or something.
Netflix is good. What do you do? When's the last time you watched a movie?
Like a full movie? Oh, you know what? A full movie. Last time I was traveling with hockey. So when was it last? Probably two weeks ago. We were all on the road.
what's the span you go? Like, what's the longest you've gone without seeing a television screen? What do you think it is?
Oh, probably every summer, because I never turn it on, or we're always so busy, so probably every summer, it'd be months, I bet.
Go a few months without seeing a TV?
Like a TV on, yeah.
And watching it for 30 seconds or a minute. You know, you can't help but go to the mall or go to somewhere and walk past the TV. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
Wow, a few months. That's discipline. I'll work at it. I'll keep working at my discipline, Tom.
That's good. Keep me posted.
I'll keep you posted. Hey, thanks for being on. We'll have to definitely have another conversation and get another podcast posted.
Absolutely. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
All right. We'll see you.
Well, we can finish our conversation. I got to...
Yeah. I was like, are we...
hang up now?